Нашел он мара в туди, зашли янхиз Адерстайл. But now I'm here to tell you, tell you prayers is happening now. Life's story, love and glory, if you listen, we're depending for you to listen and listen and dig it. Can't you dig it? Lefty Young is playing.
And we're back.
And it is the Linux Show for May the 27th, 2003. We're back. And I'm back, too. Been gone for a couple of weeks. And
welcome back, Jeff.
Here I am. I've actually showed up. The rumors of my death are greatly exaggerated. So we're going to go ahead and jump right into the show tonight. And, how are you doing tonight, Arnie?
I'm doing great. I haven't had much sleep last night, but regardless, I'm surviving. And the chat room is saying we missed you, Jeff. And we did.
Well, thanks, everybody. You know, I'll try not to do it too often in the future. But, hey, got to do what you got to do. So, how you doing, Russ?
Oh, I'm hanging in. Things out here are wet and wet. That about sums up Washington, D.C. for the past week. It's wet.
So you're telling me it's wet?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Now that we've cleared that up, it's actually been wonderful here in the Chicago metropolitan area. At least I've thought so. Kevin, what do you think? It's been pretty swell spring so far.
Oh, yeah, it's been quite nice.
I've been spending an awful lot of time sitting out on the front patio to my abode, kicking back and drinking Guinness and watching the grass grow. It's been an early summer for us to get out and hang with the neighborhood. Normally that doesn't happen quite so early, but it's been very, very pleasant. I just heard the phone beep. Is that Doc? No, it's not. Well, hopefully Doc will be joining us shortly. But let's go ahead and jump into the news segment because I've got a lot to do while you guys are calling. So, how about you, Russ? You got a whole pile of stories for us this week. Why don't you start us off?
A whole crock of stuff, as they say. Starting off with the and all the way, I should mention all the links are on the Linux Show webpage, so people wanting to follow along can find all the links there. One is the press release from LinuxTog saying that they are giving notice to SCO to cease and desist from unfair competitive practices. Now this is a pushing of buttons, and I'm not sure that it's any less valid than the other buttons that are being pushed on the SCO side of the world, but basically the LinuxTog folks in Germany are saying that, put up or shut up. If you're going to start telling our customers not to use Linux, then you better darn well say why. And whereas I think that some people who claim that show us the code, show us the code. I think that's going to that business is going to wait until there's a trial, quite frankly.
According to my lawyer, my lawyer said, and granted, he's not the only lawyer on the planet, that's for damn sure, but he said SCO can basically say whatever they want wherever they want, how often they want, and the only way they're going to be forced to sing anything is to get them before a judge.
Right.
And so this information is not going to be divulged until either Sko walks into court in the case against IBM, or if these guys actually follow through on their threat and sue Sko.
Yeah.
And have them dragged into court. I would be more than happy if, in fact, I emailed them when was it, last night, and I haven't gotten a response back, but I would be more than happy to be the first person to donate $50 to kick off a legal fund to help them subsidize the cost of their own lawyer of, you know, dragging Sko's butt into court and forcing them to show their hand. I think that that would be a great trick of the Linux community to, you know, get some people to donate money. I mean, there's plenty of us out there. If, you know, if 100,000 people all donate $1, that would be plenty to finance dragging Sko into court and forcing them to show their hand. But nothing's going to happen until they walk before a judge.
Yeah, but unlike some of the other complaints that, you know, I've seen in the open source world, this one I think has a little validity to the whole notion, too, that, you know, Sko is making claims, that's one thing, but Sko is now essentially negatively affecting other businesses by saying to customers that you better not be using Linux because that makes you liable. So, you know, I don't know whether they're going to follow through on this business or not, but...
So, are you saying that Sko is guilty of corporicide?
Sko, I don't know what Sko is guilty of, but they're certainly bringing a lot of color to the landscape. My golly, it is, it's amazing, and I think it's going to be more amazing before all things are done.
It's not just amazing, I would label it criminal, or bordering on criminal.
It's sleazy, it's childish, I don't know, criminal is a reach, but it really is. The problem
should be crime, if it isn't.
Well, you know, then sue them. Like I said, we need to motivate these guys to get a PayPal link on their website so people can donate money for a lawyer and drags go into court. But that's it, Artie. I mean, there is no real clear law that's been broken.
That's true. But, you know, it should be criminal because what they're doing is basically gaming the system in trying to.
Yeah, well, I think strawberry ice cream should be illegal too. So.
Oh, listen, it is legal. It is illegal, isn't it?
But anyway, we digress. Do you have any more stories besides that good one?
Oh, I got a mess still here. One is, and this is perhaps less a story than it is an advertisement inside some respects, but a pointer to Eric Raymond's No Secrets page, and where he is asking the community to come forward. If you happen to have ever read the proprietary Unix source code under circumstances where a non-disclosure was not required. Obviously, he is trying to put together, some prior acts here to say that not everything, if there are any pieces of the classic AT&T code in Linux that it might very well have a reason to be there, so to speak.
Not that I want to take any thunder away from Eric, because I'm glad. He's taken the effort to do the research. I think some of the stuff that he and Bruce Barron did mid to late last week was really extremely informative in terms of focusing in on the specifics of the licensing issues with Unix, and so they did a great job. But I think this next thing that Eric's doing, I think he needs to get some legal advice before he goes any farther with this. Because, well, let's remind ourselves about a story from, what was it, a week or two ago about that that SCO SUMI petition that was out there. That
was essentially
getting people to voluntarily sign up to a list that could make them, potential targets of a lawsuit. I mean, it's fun to do things like that, but there's legal risk in doing things like that. One of the things that Eric, I believe, may have made a mistake on in this effort is he has publicly stated in his posting that he wants people to furnish him with information and don't worry, I won't turn it over to anybody else, just trust me. Well, I'm sorry, but he's just Eric Raymond. You know, he's Eric Raymond, private citizen. He is not a lawyer, and he is not representing a publication. He's just a citizen. So if the courts demand that he turn over a list of names to SCO, he's got to do it. He has no choice.
Yeah.
And so I think before Eric goes too far, he really needs to get some legal advice. And I always say that because we're looking at perhaps the most predatory and vicious group of scumballs that the software industry has ever seen. Okay.
Certainly perhaps the most litigious group of people in terms of, I got a feeling that that most of their business plan is now surrounding legal activity than it is product.
It's the SCOX division. All the money is going into SCOX. And so it's basically, line them up, sue them. Interesting business plan. We're in the wrong business. That's for sure. Any more stories, Russ?
Yeah. Getting away from the SCO story for a minute, which may be heretical, but what the hell. Over at Slashdot, you can get a link to a Babelfish translation of a document that says that Munich, Germany, City Hall, apparently has decided to go with a Linux rollout to replace Windows NT as their client operating system for the city. And this is, if this is correct, this is potentially a really big thing for the European community, particularly for the German community, because Munich is often held up as a very forward-thinking technological city, and a rollout of this size is a major win for Linux if this goes through as reported.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of very interesting commentary about that story that have really not focused in on the price tag issues of Microsoft versus Linux, but have really focused in on the common sense TCO type of decision making things, and really a lot of this boils down to the fact that in Germany, Germany has already been a historic Unix-centric country within their computer manufacturing and their software development engineering community. And so they already have an awful lot of history and money invested into developing that mind power asset. And so that kind of stuff like the Microsoft service provider channel that seems to be on every second street corner here in the United States, that kind of stuff just doesn't exist in Germany.
Mm.
Not to the degree, at least, it does here. And so it really is fairly common sense from the standpoint that they already have the rest of the assets in place to go with Linux, where they don't have the rest of the assets in place to go with Microsoft. So software or operating system, cost aside, it just doesn't wash out. I think that's a really interesting argument. So,
yeah.
Any more?
Yeah, from there we jump over to the UK, and there's just a short little piece over at VNUNet about doctors prefer Linux to Windows. And it talks about how the Royal College of General Practitioners has chosen Linux as its basically email solution on the server side. And that's not a huge win per se, but it certainly appears to be a nice visible one. And also, if you take a look at the article, it cites some real world numbers that that business people might appreciate, particularly like and I quote, sending 6,000 copies of a bulletin, which typically took days and tied up the server for the whole time, now runs in 15 to 20 minutes, according to Mr. Betts. So, end quote. So this is a case where once again business wins out. It's a victory for Linux, and it's based on business terms. It's not even a question of saving a few bucks.
I'm sorry, there's no answer.
Oh my goodness!
Glad to know that. But it's a business. It's a question of what does best for this organization, and they've apparently made their choice, and that's good to advertise.
Frankly, I didn't read the article myself, to be honest. Did the article discuss at all what condition the historic UK medical profession uses for their technology now? Are they primarily, Unix, Linux, Novell? Where are they coming from in this decision that they're making?
Well, it's not okay. Based on some of the quotations here, I gather they must have been using an Exchange server, because it mentions the fact that this group is already concerned with Microsoft's security, having discovered that a hacker in France was downloading data using FTP, and this led to a security review which found, for instance, that Exchange was acting as a conduit for spam. So there's a few of these things where obviously they had been looking at specific instances of running these things on Microsoft software. So I gather that they must have been working with Microsoft before. They also mentioned that running Apache on Windows with IIS alongside showed no improvement, but when they moved it to Linux, the speed of response improved and emails also went much quicker. So,
that does surprise me. It really does. Historically, the medical profession is very much like academia. It moves along at a plodding rate, and a lot of it has to do with regulatory processes, but here I am. I'm really looking at what's going on here in the United States, and I know an awful lot of what's going on in record keeping within doctors' offices and hospitals has been done on Unix systems and has continued to be done on Unix systems, as well as a lot of Novell too. It seems that the market is pretty well split 50-50 down the middle.
Well, and also inside the VA world, you find a lot of mumps.
Yeah.
Some dedicated mumps boxes and other ones that are mumps on top of VMS and other things. So.
Yeah.
The medical industry is already a huge user of Unix boxes, and
natural. They never did uptake Windows.
No, really haven't, because especially in the data analysis and data reduction type things like in, you know, radiology and stuff like that. The Windows just, you know, just isn't there. I mean, it's like, you know, what are you going to do? Crunch data with Excel? I don't think so.
Yeah, I suppose. Okay, Arnie, well, seeing as you're talking, do you have any stories for us this week?
Yeah, there's one very, very good one, and unfortunately there's not a link.
Okay.
I was gone until very late last night, so I didn't get my links in. Let's see. Gartner Group has got released let's see if I can find it here. I just had it a few seconds ago. Gartner Group has released a thing about the SCO case, and what's interesting about it is that, here we go, it claims that this is much ado about nothing. However, it doesn't stop them from recommending that people reduce their deployment of Linux to accommodate and only deploy in medium and small areas. And if you have large-scale deployment plan, that you should probably consider what you're doing or get legal opinions. I'm not sure if Gartner's right there. I mean, they're probably taking them a very, very conservative approach here. I have the link. I can stick it in the IRC.
Yep. And you can give it to Kevin as well, and he'll try to sneak it in.
There you go. And basically, it's SCO's threat to sue Linux users serious but remote. And their first take is that SCO probably won't retreat from its threats. Linux distributors such as Red Hat have safety clauses against liability from customers. A settlement of SCO's case against IBM would not indemnify enterprises. And SCO indicated the gravity of its actions by hiring attorney David Boies. Gartner believes that SCO's motives include its open server Unixware business represents a fraction of the Unix market. Its own Linux version, formerly Caldera, struggled against Red Hat and SUSE and disrupted SCO's Unixware and open server efforts. If the lawsuit forces IBM to buy out SCO, SCO investors could exit with good returns, and forcing Linux users to pay royalties for the alleged Unix elements would generate profits and revenue from the fast-expanding enterprise adoption of Linux. Of course, this is all the stuff that we've been discussing for the last couple weeks. What I find interesting is their recommendation that enterprise Linux users should consider the SCO case before they deploy. Now, this would be a change, and this would also indicate that SCO's SCO's target is being achieved. If they're getting these high research outfits to recommend that people scale down Linux deployment, then they're winning their case.
You know, it's interesting.
Where did that article come from?
Gartner.
Okay.
Well, about 30 minutes before showtime, I got shoveled an email from someone I know who summarizes apparently a Forrester research report on the same subject of SCO and IBM. And the conclusions that were summarized there, I haven't seen the original report, but this person's take on it were as follows. It says, number one, enterprises should not stop their Linux plans. Number two, IBM will build a consortium to pay off SCO or buy it and shut it down. And number three, open source is too powerful and pervasive to be stopped. So if that's an accurate rendering, it sounds like Forrester is being perhaps a little bit more aggressive than Gartner is on this subject.
Well, I mean, I can understand these research outfits not wanting to make waves, and I can understand them wanting to be conservative. But I do not agree with their recommendations.
Well, hold it, Arnie. Okay, they're a consulting firm.
Yeah.
Okay, that means they are subject to a professional standard that you are not.
That's right.
Subject to.
That's right.
Okay, so if they say, go out and buy Linux, and next week SCO wins, they get sued.
That's true.
Okay, that's where they're saying hesitate. They're not saying don't do it. They're saying scale back, hesitate.
Yeah, well,
they're not saying. In fact, they're not saying don't do it. They say continue to do it. but they're not, they're saying on large scale thing you might want to consider.
They're just saying be prudent.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying be prudent because primarily they're thinking in terms of their own litigation.
Yeah, although Forrester apparently is taking a different tack and saying don't stop your Linux plant.
Well, I think that they have said that because every day something new comes out from IBM, and I think the comments that IBM are making are the things that we really need to watch carefully. Eric's attempt will help if he can gain evidence.
Eric's article is stupendous.
Okay. As an example, I know I was at a conference, one of the Linux expos, and it was like immediately after. It was immediately after SCO had been bought by Caldera, and they had bought Caldera like on August the 2nd, and the expo was on like August the 11th. And the guys who were the development team of Caldera were saying things like, yeah, we're already adding the Unixware drivers to Linux. You know, they were saying things like that. And so I think if we can quantify that kind of stuff, Eric's efforts are going to go a long way. But it's the things that IBM are saying that we really can take heart in because of, you know, who they are and how deep their pockets are. And that article today, talking about, it was a CRN article, about how IBM has had their legal team pull their license agreements apart 9 ways to Sunday, and their license their license for Unixware is totally irrevocable and perpetual. IBM, you know, they're the big guy on the block. They don't make a habit of investing money in an operating system where they're not going to have access to that operating system forever. You know, it's just not likely to happen. And so that's why they have perpetual license agreements that last forever and ever and ever. And they say that they're every day another article comes out, another interview is done where IBM is just stating the obvious. You know, we're ready. Let's go. And they've got the documentation. I'm very confident on it. Any more?
Yeah. And this directly links with this, dovetails very nicely. There's an article at Yahoo News entitled IBM Stallings, Here's Customers' Linux Stories. And this is an example of exactly some of the things that IBM is using to fight the FUD that SCO is generating with this thing. They're looking for stories from people who are using Linux in the enterprise, and they want to be able to obviously to be able to show that people are using Linux and it's working and it's scaling and it's doing things the way it does do things. And Jim Stallings is general manager of IBM Corp's Linux business, and there's a short interview with him Search Enterprise Linux.com news editor, and it's kind of a little interesting little interview, and he's describing what the kind of things that IBM is doing to fight the wars, and it's kind of interesting because having talked to the IBM people on several occasions, they really haven't changed their story since they started going big guns on Linux. They really haven't changed it. They seem to be today just as firmly in our camp as they were several years ago when they first joined Linux team.
Yep, and I'm glad too, but just, you know, let's take a reality check here. There was a day when we called IBM the evil empire, not Microsoft.
That's true, and I remember, but you know, there's been conversions before, and born again conversions before, and IBM seems to to definitely be a born again company. And one of the things that in when I've talked to them before, one of the things they realized really early on with the Linux is that they have a laboratory where Nobel laureates have been known to work, where, for one thing, Linux is being used anyway, and two, that they can use their teams in their laboratory and their research facilities to implement open source type projects even in the proprietary way. You know, in other words, their proprietary method, they're using open source software development methodologies in their proprietary software, which is, they have enough people so that they can do that. And they've kind of thrown open the labs to that kind of development, and in addition to the GPL stuff. It's kind of very interesting.
Okay, well, unless we can get Doc hooked up with us real quick, let me hang
on. I'm here. I managed to get in. I had two problems. One is I was stuck in ESPN zone with a 6-year-old and on Times Square in New York. And the second thing was that while I was in the cab hurrying back to the apartment where I'm staying, the security code wouldn't work with when I kept calling in. So, but I'm back here now, so it's cool.
Okay, well, I have a whole list of links up on our website. You are obviously on a cell phone, and so you're not looking at the internet.
No, I'm looking at the internet. Oh, I'm back in the apartment, and I'm hooked up by wireless to the net, and I'm on the 28th floor in an apartment where I can see about 7 Wi-Fi signals, about 3 of which are useful, including the one that's in the apartment. I've picked up as many as 150 signals riding around in cabs from point A to point B here in town. But what's really encouraging about being here is that the people are sharing the bandwidth, and there's some just wonderful things. I just invite the listeners to follow the links. I'm basically here on a mission from Linux Journal to study the intersection of Linux and Wi-Fi in New York. And just two quick fun links. One of them is called basestation.net. That's BASS, like a stand-up bass or like a bass fish dash station. And it's just a really cool thing. There's this do I have that link on there?
No, I don't.
I don't have it on there. But maybe I have it in one of the on the last link, blog.linuxjournal.com, and the rest of it. Yeah, there it is. It's the base station. You see me struggling with VI on there. But anyway, it's this. These guys have taken an 80s boombox, okay, and gutted it and turned it into a portable Wi-Fi base station that runs on Debian Linux. There's an IPX board in there driving a 120 gigabit hard drive. And everybody can upload whatever songs they want. It's not on the net. It doesn't have to be. It could be on the net. But basically, it's a community site, and anybody can kind of program this thing as being their sort of internet station that does whatever they want it to do. It's a very cool thing. And people haul this thing to parks and then set it out there, and people hack into it and with their, you know, there's a browser interface. Anyway, it's a really cool thing, and we're going to be putting it in the story that I'm doing about wireless in New York. There's also a thing called NYC Wireless, which is a very cool organization that's getting Wi-Fi into public spaces, and the city is doing some cool stuff, too. A report was published that's on that site, I think, on the NYC Wireless site. I think it's nycwireless.net. And there's a meeting tomorrow night. I'm going to be there. And so anyway, there's very cool stuff happening there, which doesn't entirely compensate for the very legitimate doom and gloom stuff that you put up, Jeff, which is really cause for enormous worry. But it is really exciting to be in New York, even in the rain, and just turning on a laptop and cruising around town with you know, a Linux laptop with Kismet running, and just picking up one signal after another, you know, that people are just putting out there, whether by intent or not. I'd say about half of more than half of the signals are not web encoded, and of the remaining ones that are open in that respect, probably about half or less are, you know, you can get into them. But it was kind of neat. A friend of mine and I were sitting in the middle of Stuyvesant Town, which is where he grew up on the east side, and which is this big housing project, very old housing project. And we're just sitting there, and he's getting his email from Holland, which is where he lives part of the time, on somebody's home Wi-Fi, you know, that's just open. And we're just out there in the park and using it. You know, thank you very much for putting the flowers outside the apartment and carry on. Anyway, so it's a lot of fun being here and kind of covering this subject.
Did you actually talk to the people at NYC Wireless?
I've talked to some of the people there.
How are they getting businesses primarily to put up the base station? How are they getting?
Well, the base station is an entirely separate project. Okay,
well, I understand that.
Yeah.
But when I'm using the generic.
Oh right, obviously, yeah. Some of them are located. From what I can tell, the one that serves the south end of City Hall Park seems to be coming from J&R, which is a vast retailer across the street. And J&R sells an enormous amount of Linksys, especially base stations. Let's say about a third of the stations say Linksys. In other words, they default to the Linksys. Linksys is selling a lot of stations, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them. You know, they've sort of figured that out. A lot of them say Apple. A lot of them say whatever anybody's felt like, you know, naming them. You know, some will say Die Yuppie Scum or The Revolution Is Today or, you know, whatever. but there's great energy going on in New York. I had lunch today with Drazen Pantich. He's the guy who started B92, which is this the station in Belgrade in Yugoslavia during the hard times. And then he was shut down by Milosevic, but he was still on the net. And long story short, the signal ended up coming down and serving lots of stations in Yugoslavia from satellite through, I think it was Holland. I'm not sure what. But in any case, he's done a lot of really cool stuff. And he's got this, I mean, he's tied up with this, I wish I had it in front of me, but there's a Linux distro that has an open source streaming server that he's sort of promulgating right now. I'm very excited about it. I haven't seen anything with it yet because I just met with him today, and this is the first time I've been back since then. I haven't had a chance to, like, get on and see what it's all about. But he's driving an effort, and these base stations guys are doing it. NYC Wireless, that's just one organization. Just lots of great stuff going on here.
Well,
really
hey,
cool
if they've got a streaming server, Doc, have them contact us, and we'll start.
Yeah, this is like for video and shit. I mean, I wish I had my notes in front of me, but I don't. But maybe next week we'll go into it. But anyway, I don't want to hog the floor, but glad I got back in time to, like, just sort of, to, you know, throw in some positive, you know, enthusiasm for what's going down here. You know, as one of the guys who I interacted with said, it's not utopia, but there are lots of people doing a pretty good job of trying to make it that. And at least there's some elbow room for doing it here, which is really nice.
Yeah, it may end up being the last bastion of the real Internet commons.
Right. And who knows? I mean, you know, it could be the bad guys will come and just, you know, shut it down somehow. You know, we need to make it happen fast.
Yep.
You know, we need a lot of people involved, and we need them involved fast. So that's part of the clarion call.
Yep. Well, I tell you what, why don't we take a short break? It is, after all, way past half past the hour. So we'll take a very, very short break. Everybody kick back and relax, and we'll come back with segment number two of the Linux Show for, what is it, May the 27th, 2003. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be right back.
I'm a glum one. It's explainable. I met someone. Unattainable, life's a bore. The world is my oyster no more. All the papers where I led the news with my capers now will spread the news. Superman turned out to be flash in the pan. I've flown around the world in a plane. I settled revolutions in Spain. The North Pole I have charted. Still I can't get started with you. on the golf course, I'm under par. And all the movies ask me to star. Got a house that's a showplace. Still I get no place with you. You're so supreme. Lyrics I write of you scheme. Just for the sight of you dream. Both day and night of you. But what good does it do? I've been consulted by Franklin D. And Greta Garbo had me to tea. Still I'm brokenhearted, 'cause I can't get started with you.
When I sell kisses at a bazaar, the wolves line up from nearby and far. With kings I've a la carte, but still I can't get started with you. The millionaires I'd have to turn down would stretch from London to New York town. The upper crust I visit, but say, what is it with you? Oh, tell me why am I no kick to you? I who'd always stick to you. And stick to you. Tell me why I'm taboo. Though beauty columns ask my advice, though I was Miss America twice, still you've got me outsmarted, 'cause I can't get started with you.
Jazz clubs, I've been a star. Even put new strings on my guitar. So many tunes I've charted, still I can't get started with you. Across the ping pong table, I'm feared. I even grew this wonderful beard. I come on like a swinger, but you don't let me linger with you. I play in tune. My beat is reliable when I croon. The ladies get sighable, but when it's June, it's undeniable. I get witter from you. I've been consulted by Richie C. On every tune, I'm in the right key. My hair is neatly parted.
Still, I can't get started.
Okay, we're back.
It's the Lennox Show for May the 27th, 2003. Still no Joe Barr. Joe Barr, where are you? Looking for, this is a Joe Barr alert, looking for him. Let's do a little maintenance before we jump into segment number two of the show. And it's our usual plugs for our sponsors. If you're out there listening to the show or in the IRC room, please check out our website, www.thelinuxshow.com, and take a look at some of the links that we have up, and visit the things that our sponsors are doing, because not only are they you know spending money on the sponsor, but you're also spending money to help support the Linux Show. So buy a domain registration, or you know, buy one for a present for somebody. How's that as an idea? But check the website out, or if you're just in the mood to donate some money, the Linux Show is always looking for sponsors. Be you an individual Linux user group or a company, you can sponsor a show or an entire month of shows and get your group or your company plugged on the weekly edition of the Linux Show. So please check it out and help support the Linux Show. Make sure we come back each and every week. It is really very expensive to produce this show every week, and we do our best to keep the advertising spew down to a minimum. Also want to send out word as a hello. I did it in the IRC room a little earlier today, but we have a new semi-celebrity guest on the IRC tonight, at least someone I've not seen on the IRC before. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but Steve Marcel out there, the author of Linux System Administration, amongst other famous Linux books. I think, what else did he write? Moving to Linux, or I can't remember what the title was.
He's also the monthly columnist, Linux user columnist for the Linux Journal, and I've always liked his articles. They're very much fun.
Yes, very, very much so. So Marcel's out there, and so everybody in the IRC, give a hearty hello to Marcel, and he can join in the dialogue tonight.
Actually, he's gone, but he's left his IRC up, so he's going to read the mail later. So say hello to Marcel.
Okay. Oh, that's too bad. So I'm hoping he'd at least hang out to the break, but that's okay. Let's go ahead and jump on to segment number two, and this is 180 degrees from the fun and insanity that Doc was talking about at the end of segment number one. And this is a very, very dire situation that we are now faced with. It may sound to many out there ridiculously doom and gloom on my part. I do have a tendency of being suspicious of people and judging people a little harshly. But we do have a really ugly situation that we are being faced with as a community of technologists. And I'm sorry to say, regardless of the pleading of the people here at the Linux Show and the people at many of the organizations that have been started to protect electronic consumer rights and internet rights, the warnings have really gone unheeded. And so there has been, over the course of the last year, a dramatic erosion in what we once had in the internet technology community. This is bleak. This is very, very bleak. We had already seen in the past, from the period of 1996 forward, laws and regulations that changed decades worth of pro-entrepreneur legislation turned around to favor large businesses and consolidations, and that has been really going on since 1992 with no abatement, but in particular in 1996 it's been going on in the telecommunications, internet, consumer electronics, the industries that affect us. And so we're now to the point where we have only 5 phone companies, only 4 cable companies, only 5 major intellectual property companies, a handful of broadcast networks, and we are now faced next week with the FCC casting down the final barrier, which is preventing all these companies from just merging into gigantic mega corporations that will literally own the internet. If this regulation passes, there will be absolutely nothing stopping any of these companies. A company can move in and legally buy every newspaper, every TV station, every cable outlet, and every radio station within a geographic area. And that's really what the big corporations want. They've always intended of mirroring the footprint of the five regional Bell operating companies, that they were just dividing up the country into regions, and that these entertainment companies would eventually merge with the phone companies. Well, a lot of people said I was nuts, but it's happening. And the final barrier is being voted on next week, and Chairman Powell of the FCC did not last week show up to any of the meetings that were open to the public to hear public comments. In other words, he's already decided. He's gotten enough backing from both parties that this is going to happen. In the halls of Congress, this is already considered a done deal. There will be nothing to stop these companies from further consolidating. When that happens, we are powerless. If they control access, they control content development, they control content delivery, we're screwed.
So is there an artist out there who can draw the net as Alderaan and all this as the Death Star? I'm asking a favor for listeners out there. If they can take Jeff's text and put it to pictures, and we'll find a place to put it.
I have an idea. That would be, how about our friends at Beyond Y2K?
Oh, you mean...
after Y2K, rather.
Yeah, I can contact them and see if they'd be willing to do that.
That would be... She's been kind of quiet the last few weeks, and it would be really nice to, you know, get her rolling on some of this editorial content.
The metaphor that I see right now is the Men in Black, you know. There's a bug in the system, you know, the cockroaches that look like a human being are, you know, out to destroy the universe. You know, they want the galaxy. You know, they can get it, but we need to blow them up in a way. I mean, it's like that. It's very much like that. I have to confess, I'm relying on your expertise more than mine and your experience here, Jeff. But, I mean, I had heard, and maybe you can fill me in on this, I haven't looked in it closely enough, but isn't Cisco like looking at selling some kind of router with a valve in it, just so that's built for DRM, basically, so that they can turn the depths of the internet, and you know, from a passive conveyor of bits into a one-way valve for DRM content?
Oh yeah, it's all organized. In fact, one of our previous arch enemies, Congressman Towson, his bill, the Townsend-Dingell Act, went down. You know, let's give the Congress the kudos when they do stop something when it's needed to be stopped. They stopped the Townsend bill last December, and the Townsend-Dingell bill was to allow this to happen, and it was stopped. And so rather than route it through Congress, they just had the FCC take over and pass regulations that would bypass the legislative process. So, in other words, it's taxation without representation.
That's what the current administration has been doing quite a bit.
Oh, Arnie, don't say that, Arnie. This is both parties.
I know that.
Okay, so...
But,
Arnie, excuse me. Arnie...
Colonel Powell's son is the head of the FCC, and policy
Arnie,
decisions made at the FCC are not the policies of of the party not in power. They are the policies of the party in power.
This is red herring shit. It really is. It's like, you know, are you...
But they're both doing it. You're right.
You know, is it Darth Vader or Grand Moff Tarkin that's going to push the button?
That's right. But they're both doing it. It's true. But the thing is, it takes the purse. It takes the...
drawing line. Okay.
I'm not drawing lines.
Yeah, you were.
No, I'm not. It's the party in power that's doing this right now. It's a fact.
Arnie, it's not
okay,
a fact.
Okay, so Arnie, are the Democrats going to save us?
No.
Okay, so
I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying it's the party in power that is doing it now.
Okay, I want to remind you, Arnie, it was Gore and Clinton, who wrote the
1990s. Okay, right. We're going back completely off track here. You know, we have a clear and present danger, and we need to do something about it.
Our government collectively against us.
That's right, and we have to fight.
Democrats, wake up to it.
Listen, I wasn't trying to say what you think.
Yeah,
I was
you
trying.
Were, Arnie.
No, I think you're just a little hairspring right tonight, Jeff.
Okay, it doesn't matter. I think Jeff's points are well taken, and we need to work on it. I mean, it's a clearly a huge issue.
It is a
you know. I mean, the internet has been offensive to these people since day one. This is what they see as how they survive, and frankly, we need to find a way to disrupt it. And I think we need to put our thinking caps on and do something radical and new. I really do.
And as it happens, Kevin. Should by now have an email address to one of the commissioners of the FCC, and just, you know, although it's a side issue, the guy just happens to be a Republican, Arnie. But he's the one guy in the FCC who is standing up for consumers and standing up for small business.
There's actually a bipartisan effort in the FCC to do that. Yes.
Well, yes.
But they're minorities.
But he is the guy driving it. And I don't care what party he's in. I only care about the fact that he is our savior. He is the only thing that has stopped them from railroading this thing through months ago. That one man. And we need to email him our support. We need to,
as well as the Democrats on the FCC that are also with him.
Yes. But what I've got on also on the website tonight is links to both the congressional database and the Senate database. And I'm urging everybody who's listening to the show to contact their representative and their senators, regardless of whether you're in the same party as them or not, and call them up. It's really easy to get their phone numbers. Call them up and ask to speak to their legislative aides. Do this tomorrow. Don't wait. Do this tomorrow, and tell them of how disastrous this is to small business. There is a posting on the website tonight that explains the gist of the timeline and the things that have happened. But we need to act. We need to act within 7 days. If we don't act within 7 days, the mountain will be so high, it may be next to impossible for us to stop it. But if we cast our support with the allies that we've got in the FCC, we might be able to get them to stop this set of regulations. And if we get them to stop this set of regulations, they might be willing to sit down and listen to a group of people. I have tried to make arrangements for that to happen already. But until people start calling, until people start faxing their senators, start faxing their congressmen. Forget email. Don't even bother emailing them. Just call them on the phone or write them letters or send them telegrams.
A telephone call does wonders. It's inexpensive. You can call the Senate Majority Leader, the Senate Minority Leader. And what I recommend you do, and this is something that can really be helpful, is call the technology committee chairman and members. And also, there's another thing, write letters to the editor of your major newspapers, and they will be published, and that helps too.
We have a week, Arnie. We don't have time for letters to the editor. We need to act directly to the Congress.
Those you can send by email.
Yeah, well,
we have time for that because editors like to get those things up.
I don't want people to waste time. They've got 1 week.
No, it's not a waste time to write letters to the editor.
Well, they can write letters in 2 weeks. They got 1 week to contact their congressman, and I don't want to see people get sidetracked with so limited time.
Telegrams work too.
Telegrams are wonderful.
They're expensive, but they work.
A telegram is like making 25 phone calls in the eyes of a person in Congress.
That's right.
And whatever you do, don't bring party politics when you talk to them. That is the surest way to screw this thing up, is to start bringing party politics into it.
I agree.
Okay, then stop doing it.
I didn't.
Okay. I'll play back the file
I didn't.
Later, Arnie, okay?
No, you jumped down my throat, Jeff. I didn't know.
You deserved it. Let's
not get off here, guys. Let's go forward.
Yeah, let's go forward. There's other stuff.
Okay, but anyways, well, that's it. That's the end of the information, and it's timely because it's 9 o'clock. And so why don't we just call it an evening, unless somebody's got some other stories they want to bring up. Anybody?
Just a quickie that IDG is reporting that mono should finally hit 1.0 this year. And considering this is one of the stranger open source efforts to date, in how to live with Microsoft, it's one that bears watching. It'll be interesting to see what comes of that.
Okay. Well, if there's nothing else, no further ado, what I'd like to do is thank everybody for listening to this rather electrified show, I'd say. Please come back next week. We love it when you come here. We would not be here without you folks. So tell your friends and tell your business associates. Tell all your lug buddies. Come check out the Linux show. If nothing else, we'll put on a good argument for you.
There you go.
So, everybody, hang loose. We'll be back next week, same time. This has been the Linux Show for May the 27th, 2003. We're out of here, everybody.
While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy. But when I do, I don't follow through because my heart belongs to Daddy. If I invite a guy from now to dine out to Boston and Hattie, a deuce to John, he's asking for more, but my heart belongs to Daddy. My heart belongs to Daddy. Simply could it be bad? And my heart belongs to Daddy. It's bad, 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 bad. Want to warn you, Daddy, so I think you're perfectly swell. My heart belongs to Daddy, because my daddy, he treats it so well.